Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Rather than watch it fail, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson last minute cancels a budget vote.
The reality is, we're very close, but we're still not there yet.
Which means members of the City Council will spend the weekend in negotiations. They've got to get a deal by the end of the year. If not...
If we don't have a budget, there's no appropriate appropriations line for the services that people rely on.
Meanwhile, the city and state prepare to become ground zero for deportations, as threatened this week by President-elect Donald Trump's so-called border czar.
We have laws that protect undocumented immigrants, and I'm going to make sure to follow the law. I'm concerned that the Trump administration and, you know, his lackeys aren't.
We're going to start sending people out of the country that present a threat to us and should never have been here to begin with.
Calls for a crackdown on unregulated intoxicants like Kratom and Delta 8.
These harmful products that are in our streets, they're in our local gas stations.
But hemp businesses say Illinois is about to kill a flourishing industry. And Cook County discovers problems with how assessors value commercial property. Effects could impact your property tax bill.
And now to talk about all of that and more, our Week in Review panel. We've got Mitch Armantrout of the Chicago Sun-Times, our very own Heather Sharone of WTTW News, Rufus Williams of WVON, and also Gregory Pratt of the Chicago Tribune. Now, Heather, no budget vote after all. Was there really a risk that it was going to fail?
Yes, it's clear that the mayor does not have 25 votes, much less 26 votes. And the mayor said today that if he had gotten to 25 or thought he had gotten to 25, he was prepared to break the tie and pass the budget. But it shows you just how deeply unpopular his budget plan is, and in particular, his proposal to raise property taxes by $68.5 million.
So, Greg, is there any sense of either how much room he has to make up to get this over the finish line?
Well, Alderwoman Maria Hannon was talking today about how this isn't necessarily even about the issues anymore. It's about people have a problem with the mayor, and it's about that relationship. So I think he has a serious problem with that. And, you know, actually, WTTW's own Heather Sharone had a really great story about how he lost control of the budget crisis of the budget process, and that's still playing out. And it's you know, I wouldn't bet money on anything involving this right now.
Yeah. The fundamental question is, and the fundamental issue is that if you're going to ask older people to take a deeply unpopular vote to raise people's taxes, you've got to give them something to go to their constituents and say, look, this is what you're going to get in return. But there's not really any new programs in the budget. And for progressives, it means that it's another year where the mayor isn't sort of making good on his promises to invest in the city's social safety net to help working class Chicagoans. And in fact, it will actually be a step back. Under the current plan, $30 million that was supposed to renew the city's guaranteed basic income program goes away. And that's a really hard pill for a lot of progressives to swallow.
But Rufus, is this just maybe then members of the city council ignoring the harsh reality that there isn't the money to do all of those things? You either need to raise taxes or cut programs or a combination thereof.
Well, it's a lot of what the city council has talked about. What cuts are coming in? What are the things that we can't afford to do while we continue to look at this and raising property taxes or getting revenues from other places, which all comes from the citizenry? And that is where the rub is. The mayor doesn't want to cut any services. He doesn't want to cut any programs. But it appears that we just can't afford all the things that are there. And that seems to be the missing link in what's trying to be made in this budget.
But Mitch, the mayor calls himself the collaborator in chief.
Right. He's kind of trying to spin this as a sort of a new way of doing things, which it certainly feels new to all of us. I mean, this has really been a jarring process just because, you know, we're used to the administrations of Rahm Emanuel, Richard M. Daley, to a lesser extent, Lori Lightfoot, who specifically with Mayor Emanuel, you know, just a really skilled politician in terms of doing the horse trading behind the scenes to make sure he has the votes before you're anywhere near, you know, coming to a meeting to put it up for a vote. And Brandon Johnson's really just, it feels like he's been floundering for the last month or so to try and make things happen behind the scenes.
I thought perhaps there was a situation that may be indicative of where things are. There were a lot of questions today about funding of a required a sidewalk snow shoveling program. And refusal by the mayor to commit to saying whether or not it's in the budget, because if you have it out, people aren't going to vote for the spending plan. But if you have it in, you're going to upset other people and perhaps lose those votes. Am I right? Is this sort of indicative of what he's dealing with, Greg?
Yeah, there's a real lack of trust between a lot of aldermen and the mayor and a lot of aldermen and the mayor's office. And to the point about, like, collaborator in chief, you know, I mean, that's a title he gives himself, right? I can call myself the Batman, and it doesn't mean that I'm beating criminals tonight. It's just,
we can try to pick up that nickname for you if you'd like.
He's given himself the title and hasn't really
put in the work.
Put in the work to earn it.
So can he do it this weekend, Heather?
Well, there are two possible paths to a budget deal. So they have to find essentially $69 million in the next 72 hours, let's just say.
The amount of the property tax
increase.
Correct.
Because nobody believes that a property tax hike of any amount will pass the city council. So one, they could cancel some of the advanced pension payment that the city is not required to make under state law and sort of use that money to balance the budget. However, that risks the Wall Street ratings agencies downgrading Chicago's credit and making it more expensive for the city to operate. That will be deeply unpopular. There also was a lot of talk today about essentially $170 million in the Chicago Police Department's budget that is used to fund vacant positions. And I think a lot of the talks this weekend is going to be figuring out how much money they can take from that pot, assuming that those positions will not be filled this year because it's hard and complicated to train new officers and get them onto the roles, and whether that can sort of serve as cuts, even though there won't be any service cuts or any, you know, people won't, you know, see fewer officers on the streets. However, that is going to be a difficult sell for some people who consider themselves very pro-police and are worried that they'll be tagged with voting to, quote-unquote, defund the police. However, does it make budget sense in a tough year to have essentially $170 million in reserve in the Chicago Police Department budget, which makes up more than 43% of the city's discretionary fund? I think those are hard questions that the alder people are going to be confronting.
Covering government for a long time, though, once you lose that money from a department's budget, it is hard to get it back. Rufus.
Yeah, let's be clear. This is, to Mitch's point, this is not the same city council that existed under Mayor Daley or under Rahm Emanuel or even under Lori Lightfoot. This is a very empowered city council that feels strongly in being a strong city council versus a strong mayor that we've had under the others. And they're flexing their muscle and showing their teeth. And I think when the budget begins with an untenable $300 million property tax increase, then you kind of lose control of it at that point.
Is this the case of a different city council, a different makeup of just the alder people representing Chicago's wards, or is it a weak mayor? And so I guess that is to say, if a different mayor were on the fifth floor, would we be hearing the same sort of pushback because the times and just the makeup of the city council have changed? Or are we getting this sort of empowered city council because it's Mayor Johnson?
I think it's a little bit of both, honestly, because you no longer have sort of a party structure that trains people, sort of brings them up through the ranks, and then they run for alder people, and then they serve on the city council. On the other hand, you have a mayor who has said, I want to have these discussions in public, not behind closed doors, because I don't have any doubt that the discussions were just as tough under Rahm Emanuel and under Richard M. Daley. It's just that the public didn't see that. And I think Brandon Johnson has said that he sees a value in sort of having these discussions in public and sort of letting Chicagoans see how the sausage is made. The issue is I think many Chicagoans, longtime Chicagoans, see this as chaos and they wonder, can Brandon Johnson govern Chicago? Is this, you know, sort of going to, are we going to sort of get to a place, or are we going to shut, the budget going is going to shut down the city in 18 days? And I think it's really important to say that if the budget deal doesn't get done and the government shuts down, well, we'll have nearly 30,000 city workers wondering if they're going to get their first paycheck in January. And I imagine that that's making this holiday season relatively tough for
and
a lot of them.
And questions, of course, about all of the residents who depend on the services.
Correct.
That those employees carry out. Just Greg, over to you. Do you agree with that assessment? Is this a mix of both a changed city council and who's in the office?
I think in general you have aldermen that are much more serious and less, much less scoundrelous than previous aldermen who were much more, you know, we've been doing a series about the history of corruption in Illinois and Chicago. You had a lot of aldermen who were just stumble down drunks and crooks in the city council, and they were proud of it 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago. You don't have that anymore. It's just a very different. So you have people who take their work more seriously, and we've had back-to-back weak mayors and mayors that had very limited executive experience, which Lori and Brandon do have limited executive experience, and they're running into a lot of trouble because of it.
Let's move on to, because we've talked about property taxes and how that may or may not be part of this final package, looking more like a no, but we have an unprecedented review of commercial properties out from Cook County, looking at some millions, really, I believe, a couple million of commercial properties. That's things like apartments, warehouses, office buildings. Mitch, what did this assessment find?
Right, so the county commissioned this study of the property tax system that I think, you know, a lot of homeowners certainly have suspected for a long time that the process is flawed. But this really took a look at valuations of commercial properties over the years and basically found that, you know, it's just kind of a slipshod system in terms of different buildings being valued at, you know, just not... just discordant rates across the board that's resulted in higher bills for some folks and lower bills for others. And, you know, this is obviously playing out a lot for homeowners in the south suburbs who have seen massive property tax hikes. And it just raises more questions about what can be done to make things fairer across the board.
Rufus, what does something like this report do to people that are already annoyed, wary of those bills?
You know, property taxes continues to be the issue, and it continues to come up, right? And so the way the system works is that there is a number that's needed, and the number is going to come either from residents or it's going to come from commercial. When it's slipshod in this way, when there's no way to really understand how this actually works, then you lose trust in the system, and it makes it very difficult to pass anything when we talk about a city budget or any other budget, because you're relying on people who don't have any faith and the information that's being given.
And Greg, it also seemed to indicate that the assessor's office and the board of review, where those who believe that they were over-assessed would go to appeal, that those entities aren't speaking to each other. And we know that there's a bit of a political grudge. Is this part of the Chicago way, or an instance of get it together despite your political feud?
It's not a professional system that we have, right? It's an elected system, and you have people making a lot of political choices sometimes, and then the assessor and the board don't like each other, and you have all that conflict. It's really, really unfortunate, because the people who get hurt are the people who pay the tax dollars, and normal people, the people with the bungalows and little shops, and they're getting screwed left and right.
Do you have faith it's going to get fixed?
No.
All right. We'll take that as a simple answer if you'd like.
But we'll see. I do think there are a lot of, I don't want to be overly cynical. I think there are a lot of people trying their best. I also think that the problems are very big, and
it's a complex system.
Unfortunately, people aren't playing nice with each other.
Well, talking about not playing nice, let's go to the incoming president, of course, Donald Trump, and the borders are whatever position that is. I don't believe that's in the Constitution at all or anything. Not an official cabinet spot.
Yeah, I think we're going to find a lot of things that aren't in the Constitution that will be happening over the next four
years. What are you predicting here? Because Tim Holman in Chicago promising that the city and Illinois are going to be ground zero for deportations, Rufus.
I think they will make it ground zero for deportations. There's clearly, you know, the incoming president has said promises made, promises kept, and has been very clear about being vindictive on a number of things. Clearly, he and the governor don't get along. And there have been things that have happened with the mayor. As Governor Abbott out of Texas sent so many migrants here throughout the year, smart on his end, but it really created some difficulties here in Chicago. And so when they talk about, and when they talk about coming in, and they talk about getting out of the way, the mayor has to get out of the way, or the mayor will be prosecuted because this is what they're gonna do. I mean, we're going to have to be set up for some real strong, harsh legal battles in all of these things, and we'll see how they come out. But I think we take him at his word.
Heather, what powers do the mayor and governor have?
Well, they can direct law enforcement, both Illinois State Police and other state agencies and Chicago Police, not to assist immigration and customs enforcement, assuming that they do send federal agents here to Chicago. Now, we should be clear. Sometimes we've heard the president-elect say that he's only looking to deport people with criminal records who've been convicted of crimes. ICE is entitled to do that today. That can be happening and probably is happening right now. The question that I don't think is clear is, will they target undocumented immigrants who have not sort of interacted with the criminal justice system? And I think that's where you've got a lot of fear, because if you talk to people, our own Joanna Hernandez has talked to people saying that, well, I don't think I'm at risk because I'm not a criminal. I just go to work, I come home, I raise my family. The question is whether the president-elect will direct federal agents to sort of, you know, go into churches, go into schools, go into places of business, and we simply don't know the answer to that question. It's clear, though, that they're going to do that without the help of the Chicago police or state officials. Whether that sort of lack of assistance will make any difference, I think, is unclear.
What do we make of this focus on violent offenders? The hearing this week in Washington led by Illinois' own Senator Dick Durbin, and that was really the bulk of the focus. You had the governor this week repeatedly saying, if there is somebody with a criminal past or who commits violence, you're not welcome in Illinois. So why this focus?
I think it's almost an interesting shift in messaging for Democrats. So looking at this from a political perspective, we're coming off a presidential election that was pretty decisively, obviously went to the Republicans. And I think Democrats sort of feel like voters feel like they haven't been tough enough in some respects. And obviously, saying that you're going after criminals is not a controversial policy shift for Democrats. But, trying to get ahead of that and trying to present more of a tougher on crime approach to this when it comes to immigration, I think that's a pretty clear policy shift.
But there is the other side that they say, and they're saying that if you're here illegally, then we're coming for you as well. And those aren't criminals. Those are the people who are working every day and going on about their business who are also at risk and now concerned
about. Mixed messages,
about,
it seems,
absolutely,
from Trump and his allies. On one hand, saying we're going to focus on those who are violent offenders, and on the other hand, saying biggest mass deportation in history ever.
Well, he keeps saying he was alluding to in an interview, I think, with Time Magazine this week, that they'll deport the U.S. citizens' children. Your family's getting deported, you get out of here too. It's cruel to separate them, so send them all out, which is really escalating language. And that's going to be one of the concerning things in the next few months is how many workplace raids happen. Every once in a while you have some giant workplace raid that really disrupts families. Are we going to have more of those? How many more of those do you have? How many more normal people, for lack of a better term, get caught up in this, and then do they start going after families? And it has the potential to be really, really dark.
This is our very own Eunice Alpesen reported that more than 155,000 of these IDs and driver's license for non-citizens were issued just like regular licenses. Does this help or change the dynamic at all in terms of folks being able to evade federal authorities?
Well, of course, the fear is that the state will have a list somewhere and that they will either willingly or unwillingly give that to federal agents, and that will be used as sort of, to target people. The issue with this is that, the state passed that law to issue those licenses and those identifications because it helps people get the services that they are entitled to, whether they are citizens or not citizens. And, we are going to, I think, have to look very carefully to see whether we are seeing immigrant communities sort of retreat into the shadows, not calling police when they're victims of crime, not sort of asking for help, not going to emergency rooms, not sort of seeking really necessary care because they fear being sort of identified by that federal government. And those that sort of card was designed to sort of help people, sort of make a new life and become, quote unquote, productive members of Illinois. Whether that will continue, I think we'll have to see.
I'm sure this came up as Democratic governors got together, and it seems, Mitch, that there was some talk of really working with the Trump administration, or really, frankly, trying to suck up to him in hopes that it wouldn't hurt states. Is that a smart strategy, or is that just meekness on the part of elected officials who really been saying fear of authoritarian government.
You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the Democratic governors sort of come out against Trump next year. You know, they've got another month to prepare. You know, we've heard from Governor Pritzker and the governor of Colorado, any number of other Democrats who are kind of evaluating Project 2025 and everything that Trump has promised to do in his first 100 days in office. You know,
Rufus?
It's concerning, angering, and frightening, quite frankly, to see that there will be some acquiescence to the loyalty that he demands, which becomes fealty in all these other places. There's got to be guardrails somewhere. There's got to be some who stand up and say this is wrong. And so to the extent that people are trying to move in line to make him happy, not to the Constitution, but to the person, it's troubling.
Mitch, I want to move on to some other perhaps regulations that will be coming into play in Illinois. And this is after Governor J.B. Pritzker has endorsed a package that will regulate what is not regulated on the federal level and currently, of course, obviously not at the state level. And that is this intoxicating hemp products. What is the plan here?
So you've probably seen, like, at gas stations and convenience stores across the city, Delta 8 is what it's called. It acts a lot like pot. It has a lot of the same effects as pot, but for legal reasons, based on its chemical composition, it's not pot. And for the last 2 years, you've got Illinois' burgeoning cannabis industry has been trying to push for regulations on this, what they view as a strong competitor from businesses that don't have to go through the stringent regulations that they do to get very expensive licenses. And today, Governor Pritzker announced his support for this bill that effectively will ban the production and sale of these hemp-derived products unless you do get that cannabis dispensary license, which, you know, this is already a business that's worth about $800 million a year, the hemp-derived product business in Illinois. And a lot of those folks are worried if this bill passes in early January that they say maybe 10,000 people could be out of a job. But Governor Pritzker says this comes down to, you know, keeping a psychoactive drug out of kids' hands. You know, there's no age restrictions on this or anything. They're packaged to look like candy. So this is it's going to be a really fierce battle in Springfield in January.
What would that do to Chicago if you have, say, 10,000 jobs lost?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of jobs that have been created by the cannabis industry. So the loss of jobs obviously is problematic. But, you know, the risk, as you point out, of having this available to people who shouldn't have it, having this available to young people, we've already seen it happen with vaping and some of the flavors that are there. So it's just, the health issue has to be taken.
And not knowing what's in these products
exactly.
Whatsoever, really.
Exactly.
Are they making Fruity Pebbles hemp yet?
I'm sure. Not really my thing, but
the
governor did today hold up packets that looked
like
nerds.
Yeah, he held up these packages. I think they were called Nerdy Bears or something. They look like nerds.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of punny names. My favorite is Trips Ahoy. But, yeah, I mean, a kid who potentially, you know, isn't old enough to read looks at that. It looks like a cookie or a candy, and all of a sudden they've ingested 500 milligrams of something that no kid should be on.
Yeah, look, we're concerned about children eating detergent because it's in a beautiful packaging. You know, we have to exercise some care at some point, and the adults have to be adults in the room.
Greg, I want to go to you because the Tribune has done some reporting on one of the mayor's top advisors, of course, and that's Jason Lee. And he voted apparently in Texas despite having to be a city resident in order to work for the mayor. Is this going to be something that the mayor continues to defend, or have we seen him distance himself at all from Lee since that report?
You know, I don't want to get into the psychology of it. I thought he could have spoken a little more strongly in defense of his aide, but he defended his aide, you know, and he said that we'll see what happens, which is not as big a bear hug as maybe you would have thought, but the mayor also has a lot of other stuff going on. That is a very that is a very interesting situation, and the mayor keeps alluding to, you know, the authorities in Texas will figure it out, and I guess we'll see what they come back with, if anything.
Heather, we've got a minute or so left. A judge that is overseeing the consent decree situation weighed in really stark terms this week.
Yeah, she said that the pace of reforms were unsatisfying both to her and to the public. And this is important because it's really the first time that we've heard U.S. District Court Judge Rebecca Pallmeyer express any sort of displeasure about the city's pace of consent decree reforms, which are now almost 6 years old, if you can believe that, and the city is only 9% in full compliance. I actually asked the mayor about that today at his press conference after the city council meeting, and he said that in some ways the consent decree is quote-unquote cumbersome, and he talked about how you have to go through a lot of steps to reach full compliance.
That so more frank language coming from both sides
yes.
there. We're going to have to leave it at that because we are out of time. Our appreciation to Mitch Armantrout, Heather Sharone, Rufus Williams, and to Gregory Pratt. We're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our program for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. There's lots of news there, but also some fun festivities if you're looking for something to do this weekend. Now, for The Week in Review, I am Amanda Vinicky. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a great night. All right, Mitch, you had a story this week regarding regulations for nursing homes, but this is an effort that stalled in the legislature. What's going on?
You know, there's this bill that's basically been hanging out in the Senate for almost a year now. It has to deal with allowing nursing home residents to sue over retaliation claims. You know, I think we've all heard horror stories about things going on in nursing homes. But basically, advocates for this bill say that Senate President Don Harmon has been holding it up, and they point to the massive campaign contributions he's got.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.